Avenue Northeast. This is a one-day collection drive with distribution to those in need to occur on New Year's Day, beginning at 10 a.m. from the lodge. Additional information can be found online at wpfwfm.org or by calling the King Solomon Grand Lodge at 202-378-3843. WPFW, our organizational partners and dedicated listeners, continue to build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
I'm Kamaya.
I'm Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no.
What'd I do?
The jury of your peers having found you guilty, 10 years.
What?
Come on!
I was in jail too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice, that's what you find, just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and thank you for the second hour every first Tuesday. We do a two-hour program live from the world-famous Ben's Chili Bowl on historic U Street in Washington, D.C. And for those folks who are listening to the show all around the world, and particularly my buddy Rick from Stuttgart, Germany, it's a pleasure when you guys call in from different countries because it makes us know that somebody is listening to some of the jiggy-boogie that we're saying. And thank you for tuning in. This is Crossroads, WPFW 89.3 FM. Our second hour, which our guest was scheduled to be the chief of police, Ms. Pamela Smith. We just got a call that she's involved in an emergency. So these things happen from time to time when we have a guest scheduled for whatever reasons they can't make it. So would you believe things happen for a reason? And sitting right next to me is a friend, but I'll let you talk to him as soon as I get through running what we call the grapevine, information that you can use, the grapevine. Hey, here's something that everybody should be interested in. Lie detectors. On August, the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation announced a ban on use of the computer voice stress analyzer, which is called the lie detector test. The controversial technology analyzes voice tremors that supposedly betray when a prisoner or person is lying, but it's been found scientifically unreliable. One expert said it was no better than using a Ouija board or astrological charts. Decades of research went into debunking the lie detector exam, showing it as no better than a coin flip at determining truthfulness. As far back in 2008, the National Institute of Justice discovered in a field test, the lie detector test was able to detect only 15% of lies about drug use, yet lie detectors use the technology for over 20 years. So lie detectors ain't nothing but some jiggy boogie. Partnerships between police officers and former prisoners promote safety and hope. At a time of wrenching division, police officers and those returning from prisons share unexpected commonalities that can bring us together. On the surface, these two groups would seem dissimilar. But a groundbreaking, Las Vegas program that bridges this divide has caught the attention of both the White House, the governors, and the country. Perhaps more importantly, this is taking a bite out of crime by reducing reoffending while boosting employment. However, these results should not be so surprising. The two groups share many experiences and challenges. Not only should hope for prisoners be replicated, it can provide a template for similar innovations that bridge the gap between those that have broken the law and those charged with enforcing it. That's an interesting concept. New Medicaid options can help inmates transition out of the justice system. Lawmakers in 2025 will also continue efforts to improve prison oversight and conditions and reduce barriers to reentry and address the behavioral health crisis. People who are incarcerated have a higher rate of mental illness, substance abuse use disorder, chronic and physical mental health needs than the general population and are particularly vulnerable upon release, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation. Until recently, states were prohibited from using federal funds to provide health care services to incarcerated people through the Medicaid program. But changes in federal laws have created new opportunities for states to use Medicaid to provide pre-release health care services for those inside and those coming out. Research report, reducing recidivism through faith-based prison programs. In the United States, there are nearly 2 million incarcerated individuals in prisons and jails. Without addressing the root factors that make criminal behavior more likely, our nation would not be able to address this problem effectively. Faith-based prison programs offer a proven solution for promoting feelings of hope and self-worth, which can play a major role in reducing the crime rate. And as we said at the top of the show, that's been the grapevine. And our guest for the second hour, the chief of police, Ms. Pamela Smith, was called away due to emergency. And I was looking forward to interviewing the chief, because 30 years ago, we interviewed the chief of police. I started a program in Town of Five, and I worked at a TV station called Tell It to the Chief. So it was like going down memory lane, bringing her in. And I'm thoroughly impressed with it. I didn't know that the chief's, both of her parents were addicted to drugs. She grew up in foster care. So she know the problem from the inside, all the hurt that we go through for being separated from your family, being placed in some house. This lady been through the pains. I wanted to bring her in. We'll get her back when the time is apropos. Who? Well, put that turkey through. Come on the phone, Rick.
Good afternoon, Roach. Can you hear me okay?
You still in Germany, man?
I'm not in Stuttgart. I'm just 15 minutes outside of Munich.
Well, how far is that from Berry Farms?
That's a long way across the ocean. It's a long way to Tipperary, my friend.
Okay, Rick, thank you for calling in. I know, man, the show is not complete unless you call in. I like to say gesundheit to you, brother, whatever that means.
Gesundheit means to your health and good health.
Okay, so what you got to share with us this morning, Rick?
I just want to say that I was given a pass and possibly a pardon under Obama. Marilyn Mosby, if not Mumia Abu-Jamal, or Leonard Peltier, if not Leonard Peltier and Mumia Abu-Jamal, then Miss Mosby is definitely deserving of a pardon. She is not guilty of shooting police officers and possibly killing police officers, but she is only, I guess, the word I'm looking for is not accused, but she is guilty of prosecuting big city police officers for doing wrong, and that is not a crime. That is to be commended. So, big Joe Biden, if you're listening, please, this woman is deserving a pardon.
Thanks, Rick. I knew you'd be right on top of it, man. In fact, the timing is right. Biden just pardoned his son. He can pardon Marilyn Mosby. And with the support that Angela Alsobrook had, and she won a seat for the Senate for Maryland, she had Kamala Harris and Obama and a whole lot of other big shots supporting and endorsing her. So we got contacts or access to Kamala, and we got access to Biden, we got access to the White House. So our listener in the first hour, one of us got up and said that Angela might be a good resource that we contact for the people who's working on the Marilyn Mosby Pardon Committee. See if you can get to Marilyn, Kamala Harris. She got less than 49 or 48 days in. She can talk to Biden and see if we can get. We got to help this sister out, man. A lot of times, folks, I don't want to help because she's a prosecutor. Man, I don't care nothing about that juggy boogie. When they come after us and they talk about killing us and killing our kids because we're doing what it is they're supposed to do, I got a lot of friends. I made best friends. Would you believe my best friend was a warden? I got to be so tight with the warden. His nickname was Jesus. I called him Jesus because when the warden came, he let me out on furlough, and I came out the gate 5-6 days a week. And I got to be best friends with the warden. And another one was Walter Ridley, was the director of the department. So to me, it doesn't matter what you're wearing or what your title is. It's where your heart's at and where your head's at. And you got a lot of people working in law enforcement and corrections whose heart and head is in the right place. So don't judge everybody and lump everybody in the same spot. We got good people doing good things in positions or job occupations that we don't like or support. So what? Check the people out. I do a thing called the inner voice check. If I meet somebody, I let my inner voice run up there. It's like my radar. And if it don't hit no bumps, you're all right with me. You can look at some people and tell that you want to talk to them or don't talk to them. So use your inner voice when you're dealing with people. And joining me, this is a makeup show. The chief of police just called and said she had to go to an emergency, so she won't be here. So I looked out in the audience, and who did I find? But I found a black Santa Claus.
Oh, my goodness.
I found a black Santa Claus. His name is Larry Watson. He's with a group called the Optimistic Gentlemen and Ladies. And how you doing, Santa?
I'm doing pretty fair for a square. Still sucking up God's wonderful air.
There you go. Boy, there you go. This is Larry Watson. He works with me and a couple other folks there, George. And we talk about a group called the Optimistic Gentlemen and Ladies. What is the Optimistic Gentlemen and Ladies, and what is your purpose?
Okay. Good morning, everybody. Optimistic Gentlemen and Ladies is a group of men. We was meeting on Saturdays down at Daddy Grace Church, you know, that eat breakfast and everything together. And we've been doing it for a few years, several years.
25 years.
So we decided, you know, Roach and Horace and myself decided, well, let's find something that we can do to leave our legacy. We keep meeting down here and we eating, right? And it's good to fellowship, but let's do something beyond that. So we decided to form a group called the Optimistic Gentlemen and Lady. And in that process, what we started doing, we're going to get our pictures. Take a group picture, put it in Ben's chili bowl, or get a mirror, put it on the wall. But then we say, nah, let's do something better than that. Let's get together and see what we can do with the returning citizens, because there was a whole lot of brothers and sisters returning. And a lot of brothers, after being home 6 months to a year, were dying. So yeah. We say we're trying to help them to find, you know, something to help them get their medication and get good health care. Also, they were homeless. A lot of didn't understand it was a culture shock to being locked up 25, 30, 40, 50 years to come back home. And then they look around, they don't even know what to do. So we say we can form a group that we can sit there and talk and advise them on what to do, because we are returning citizens ourselves. So they will listen to us. Then we got a little deeper into it. We said, well, how can we help them get jobs and whatnot? So we thought about they could be mentors to a lot of these youths. So we started dealing with the youth, looking at the youth picture of it, this whole thing. And the key to it was they know they've been surviving in the jail all these years, so they know how to survive. Now they're coming home. What we need to do is help them to teach them how to live. They teach the younger kids how to live, and not going get caught in that trap of going back and forth to jail, and their recidivism continue to grow. So this is what the Optimistic Gentlemen and Ladies was about, dealing with that and helping with the homelessness, helping with the opiate problem that we have here. We have Dr. Edwin Chapman. He's our front leader in dealing with the opiate stuff. You know, we have a lot of people, teachers and everything that can help the kids and everything. Then we also, what we ended up doing was partnership with another group called the Cruz, Communities Respecting Everybody's Will to Survive. And what Cruz did had about 10 different ministries, and each ministry is a specialist in their own area. So the key to all this thing is for us, right, to be able to be Bible members in our community and help the healing, because our community needs healing very bad. But the key to it, each, you got all these little brush fires. But if you take these brush fires and put them together, and then you have a full-fledged fire that can help burn out all this negativity, burn out all this craziness, and reduce recidivism of our kids getting locked up, going to jail. Find jobs for them. These kids, they need money to do things. They're out here stealing and robbing for what? Pennies. But let's find jobs for them to do something positive. That way they can stay in school, you understand, and the school can help them learn how to get a job. We need to get together all the top people in this city, right? Council people, whoever, clergymen, whoever, and come together, sit at the table and talk and see how we can go forth, as opposed to making laws to lock up our kids. That's our grandkids, not our kids. Me, I'm a grandfather. So our grandkids and great-grandkids, the laws we're passing now is to lock them up. And they, like we talked about earlier, it's the black kids that are being locked up the most. So the optimistic gentleman, it says optimistic. We got to be optimistic about what we're doing to go forth from present into future. We take a look at the past, right, to make sure that past don't become our present and future. So we got to be optimistic about what we're doing. And then we forming the men and women together to help our family, teach us about what the family union is all about. Now, I'm going to say this because this was my belief and my experience. When I was coming up, it was segregation. Segregation, I knew everybody on the block, two or three blocks radius. I can go in anybody's house, the doors were open. Then next thing I know, you know, in the 60s, they got this integration thing. And when the integration came, they called separation from our basic family. Everybody started chasing the dollar bill, want more money to get the dollar bill, and not knowing what to do with it. So the optimistic gentleman later, it helped us understand what is economics. Once I learned economics, I understand what the money that I get, how to use it to help my family and me. What is the other part to it is dealing with civics. When I say civics, I mean understand what's going on in my community. You understand? If I don't know what's going on in my community, somebody else gonna move in there and they're gonna make all the rules and regulations that I got to follow what they're saying. So I teach our kids what civics is all about and economics. The optimistic gentlemen and ladies are in a place where we can help people to understand what this system is all about. Because yeah. The system has got us trapped, and we in tunnel vision with it. And we need to be able to understand how to get up out of it, how to navigate through it. Because doesn't matter who the president is. If our family union is not strong, then we're in trouble.
Yeah.
So the most important thing is for us to understand and how to talk and communicate with each other.
You know, go ahead. You know, that's Larry Watson. One of the reasons why we got the group Optimistic Gentlemen together is called Wisdom from the Past to Brighten the Future. And we got men and women who did 30, 40, 50 years in prison. And they are experienced mentors. They are resources. Mm-hmm. We always say, we got the horses, but we don't have the resources. We got men and women ready to go in each community. We got another, I got a young lady sitting there we'll bring up in a few minutes, Denise Patterson, with Parent Watch. We got folks sitting inside of Ben's Chili Bowl right this morning, who've been working in the community for 20, 30, 40 years or better, and they're risking their lives and their profession and their credibility to do what they can to stop some of this violence. So with Larry Watson and the other gentleman, with George and what's your name? Calvin Shingler. How you doing, Calvin Shingler? Are you from Berry Farms? Okay. He's not Mike. He's just in the audience. So, but we got Janice Patterson from Parents Row. She'll come up in a few minutes. But since the chief is not available to be with us this morning, we had to make up a show. These things happen when you're in radio or TV sometime for whatever reason. The guests you have scheduled don't make it. So we're doing a makeup, and we got a couple of people we're talking to. But this optimistic gentleman thing is unbelievable. We sent a few kids to camp this summer from the optimistic gentleman. They went to a camp up in New York City called Young Life. And these kids went there from Kingman's Boys Club. So every year we're going to send a group of kids from D.C. to this camp. And one of the things that we asked the kids was just give us a short letter on your stay. And all the kids who wrote, all of them said at the bottom, I want to go back. I enjoy it. It was the first time they left Washington, D.C., the first time they had to pay for their food. All you can eat was provided free. And all day long, they played basketball, games, swim, rode horses, mopeds, anything you can do to enjoy, to keep a kid active. And at 7 o'clock, they had Bible studies. So every night at 7 o'clock, they did Bible studies. And when them kids came back, all the letters we got from these kids said, please include us for next year. We never had such a wonderful time. So getting these kids exposed to other places. But the optimistic gentleman, besides that, we're trying to reach back to those folk, bleeders folk. Most of the people you see who did 30, 40, 50 years are mentors. Mm-hmm. These are the guys that instruct and monitor and keep these other youngsters to come in on the right track. And they're ready to risk their lives. But the problem is, and we talked to the Attorney General, Mr. Schwab. We talked to Robert White, the city councilman. We've spoken to everybody, man. I talked to Mr. Mendelson, the chairman of the city council. We're talking to everybody. We need housing. We need housing. We need housing, and we need jobs. We took a group of kids from 5th and O to the police station, and all these kids wanted to turn in their guns. Jobs for guns. Guns for jobs. And when the guys brought the guns up, they were told that they would not accept the guns from these kids until they did a background check on the weapons. So the kids took their gun and went on back down the street. Then 6 months later, they arrest them for armed robbery, for having weapons on their possession. These kids voluntarily came into the police station and said, we're going to turn in our guns if you can give us a job. One of the things we know, all this jiggy-boogie about the crime up, going up, and going, people, jobs reduce crime. Jobs keep our community safe. We got a 70 or 75% unemployment rate in the black community. And for those people coming out of prison with criminal records, it's higher than that. Here go President Trump, get 34 felonies, and he run for president and get elected. I had 3 felonies, and I couldn't get an apartment. You know what I mean? So now he's nominated 2-3 people who got criminal records. His son-in-law, Kushner, his father, whom he pardoned his last term in the White House, he got pardoned and came a name appointing him as the ambassador to France, and he's a convicted felon. So now convicted felons are in the White House, they're in ambassadorships, they're in various cabinet positions. So what about us, the little people from the street that got criminal records, and we can't get an apartment? You can't get a job in a barbershop. Some places you can't work in the pharmacy, you can't work in the daycare center because of a criminal record. So, folk, we need to come together, and that's one of the things we were going to talk about with the chief this morning, the role that the returning citizens can play in bringing down the crime, reducing the carjacking, that kind of stuff. And we got people ready to do that. So we're just sharing stuff with you that we need to do to keep our community safe. I want to ask Janice Patterson to come up to join us. She is a workaholic.
Mama Joe.
She's all over this city. She goes into the youth detention facility. Oh, yeah. The day after Trump got elected, 2 companies' stock went to the roof because he's talking about deporting 1 million migrants. When you catch them, you got to put them somewhere. Then you got to feed them. So the 2 largest prison companies, the GEO Group and Core Civic, stock went up 35 and 45% the day after Trump won. And the reason why is they build detention for centers. They operate private prisons. So they already did 2.5 to 3 billion in the last 2 years. Billions. Now they expect to have a few more billion from locking up
all of these migrants, and before they go be deported, they got to go to court. That's going to take time. They got to be detained. They got to be fed. They got to be. So all these auxiliary services that are provided, these folks are making money through the roof. So, again, the stuff is not fair. We know what's going on, and people, we need you to stay knowledgeable and informed. We try to bring you information that you can use to keep you from going through what we're going through. And my guest for this first hour has been none other than, I call him my black Santa Claus, Larry Watson. He in all black. I thought you're supposed to wear red and white, man. You in all black. What's going on, Larry?
I would like to put out optimistic gents and ladies. This is a new beginning. DCOR. Visit our website, please, and volunteer and sign up. That's optimisticgentsandladies.org. Yeah. Please, please, please take a look and see what we are all about. Thank you.
One of the programs we started, we work out of St. Luke's Church at 15th and P Northwest. One of the things we started is a Boys and Girls Chess Club. Mm-hmm. And you may say, why? You got to think before you move when you play chess. And a lot of these kids, when I went over to jail to meet with them, I said, man, why you do what you do? This guy had 3 murder beefs, and he was crying. He said he wanted to go home. So one of the guys told him that you're already home because you killed 3 people. But he said, I never thought about what would happen if I got caught. Okay, he said, I never thought about what would happen if I got caught. So this chess would teach kids to think before you move, critical thinking. So we're starting this chess program in 15th and P at St. Luke's, and we're doing the same thing in Holland. That's just the beginning of 2-3 more programs. We got a program called Offender Anonymous to help men and women who did long time in prison to acclimate back to society. So the optimistic gentlemen and ladies are doing a lot to stay involved. They want to make sure that you stay aware of it. This is WPFW 89.3 FM. On your dial. WPFW is broadcast worldwide now, so folks from all around the world can hear what we're saying. As you just noticed, that we got our man Rick from Germany. And we'll be right back after this break.
Peace! This is your social justice calendar for the week of Monday, December 2nd. On Thursday, the 5th of December, 2 events are coming up. First, the Howard County Racial Equity Strategic Plan Community Feedback Forum will be held from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at Howard Community College. Later that evening, Africa World Now Project and Bloom Bars will present a screening of the film We Rise for Our Land by Kurt Otabenga Orderson. The screening runs from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at Bloom Bars, located on 11th Street Northwest in Washington, D.C. Saturday, the 7th of November, the Justice Involved Fatherhood Forum will take place from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. This forum will be held at the Creative Suitland Arts Center in Suitland, Maryland. The WPFW Social Justice Calendar connects you with the heartbeat of grassroots activism in the DMV. Whether it's a rally, workshop, forum, or community gathering. Submissions can be emailed to socialjustice@wpfw.org. Please include the name, date, and address of the event. Submissions are due by Thursday at 5 p.m., 2 weeks in advance of your event. Space is limited, so submissions are considered in the order received. The Social Justice Calendar is one more way WPFW connects, engages, and uplifts our community as we build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
We're back. This is Roach Brown coming to you live from the world-famous Ben's Chili Bowl. Our program is called Crossroads. It's a radio show we've been on the air for 16 years. I want to thank you for your support to keep us on the air. As we said, this is our special two-hour show we do the first Tuesday of each month. Our guest for the second hour was the chief of police, Ms. Pamela Smith, but she had an emergency and couldn't make it. What we're doing is what happens traditionally in radio and TV. Sometimes your guests can't make it for whatever reason, so you have to make up. This is a makeup show. And
members in our audience sitting here at Ben's Chili Bowl. We normally have a breakfast show, but this the COVID-19 stopped that. Before the COVID hit, we used to do the show, and you could come in and order breakfast and sit down and listen and enjoy the show. We hope to get back to that in the very near future. But in the meantime, we got a good friend, somebody I've been knowing for years. Her name is Janice Patterson, and she is something else. We go to the same church. I saw you Sunday sitting up at Boone Security at church. Lady, you work every week doing all kinds of. We meet on Wednesday nights. We've been meeting for the past year, 18 months. Me, you, and about 40, 50 other people. We don't get paid.
We've been meeting for about 40 years.
Yeah. Her and I have been meeting for 40 years, but we've been meeting for the past year with these guys. And everybody's been meeting with crews. Communities come together to respect everyone's will to survive. Janice runs a group called Parent Watch. It's needed. It needs to be replicated and expanded, and it needs to be funded. That's why we've been going to the chief of police. We're going to the attorney general, the city council. We go to anybody and everybody we can to help. So, Janice Patterson, you want to explain to our listeners what Parent Watch is and what it is that you do?
Good afternoon. Well, no, it's still morning. Good morning. Thank you, Ms. Martine and Mr. Brown and our audience and guests. I'd like to start first by saying that Parent Watch is us. It's all of us. Originally, the organization was called Bring a Parent, and we turned that into Bring a Parent Training Institute and got more into penetrating systemic change from systemic failure. Now, Parent Watch, we are housed, and I first want to say I am very proud to be a part of the OG's Ops.
Optimistic gentlemen and ladies. Gents
and ladies. I'm very proud to be a part of that. I begin, my heart is like bleeding before I can even begin to start talking about the importance of what Parent Watch is. I want to kind of set the tone of, if we think about it, no dark and brown person, or especially a Black mother, should ever even attempt to let them to continue to talk about our children, our parents, and our families. We need to stop and think that they have to know something good about us that we don't know ourselves, because I still see Black mothers taking care of white babies. I still see Black mothers raising families, cooking their meals. So we can't be but so violent and so all of these things that they're listing us to be. So that's why I've always been in the midst of promoting Parent Watch, Bring a Parent, and the elevation of what Dr. Heights, no offense, I don't know what y'all guys are doing, but please bring back the Black family reunion. And I remember decades and years of people saying, why do you, Dr. Heist, why do you call it Black family reunion? She says, y'all have all y'all beliefs. We have to have something that our children and our families can learn about the value of the Black family. That doesn't mean that we're segregated. That doesn't, I mean, integrated, or we're against anybody. But we have to realize the value of who we are in relationship to what is. And so Parent Watch, we're at DC Superior Court. And as I list these names, as we know, we have a lot of institutional intellectual learned privilege that really will not begin to articulate and understand the value. They want to say that on the ground boots and grassroots, but no, we are actually the resource and the source that make them do a better job, but they just don't invest those dollars back to us based on what we bring to the table. So I wanna understand that we need to build our families, elevate our families, and we need to know who we are again in relationship to what is. Many days when, and this piece I'm gonna stay, and then I'm gonna go back to working in the detention centers and all the systems that touch our children and family. And we talk about confinement, but our children have contact. We are touched in the womb in terms of law enforcement, penal actions, suspensions, expulsions. Let's go for real. What's the thing Obama started? My brother's keepers.
Yeah.
That's based off of our black boys being suspended and expelled from school, and this pipeline to prison and all that. No, come on, guys. It goes all the way back to history. So we're not going to get back into that. But okay. I just want to really say that we need to value who we really are, and we need to go and embrace our children. We need to stop saying our children are murderers and they're bad and all these things, because we got to think about it. It's in the Bible. Those who help the little children. He tells you, he instructs us to help the little children, okay? So we need to look at ourselves. I work in an institution, and I can't even begin to tell y'all what people say about our children and our parents. But no one is sponsoring or mentoring our families. They are degrading us at all tables and all conversations. And look, y'all talking about Mobley, it's a lot of us that are out here that are in bars and in prison.
Yes.
They don't want to fund this show. They don't want to fund Parent Watch. They don't want to fund what really works. And our investment dollars go into inaccurate data that does not meet the needs of what the funding should go to. We have been surveyed, data-driven, focus groups for decades. But they don't want to utilize what works. We have, I'm not even going to count the numbers, maybe 90-something or however many children are over at our youth center. How many of us think they sit at tables and say our parents don't want to show up, but sometimes they don't have car fare, and I go in my own pocket. Sometimes they can't come to court because they don't have the money. We have institutions that know that a parent that has 6 or 7 other kids cannot be the court at 9 o'clock. So why not have their court hearing at 1 o'clock? So these are all of the obstacles and system failures. But we got millions of dollars. No offense, Mayor Bowser, thank you. And I don't want to know if I want to say allow me, but I will say allowing Parent Watch to work in your facilities to ensure that our children get what we call human skills, human conversations, and not always somebody sitting down with an ink pen. And if you white out all the names, the evaluations for our children are all the same. So that go to show you our mental health practitioners are not really doing the work. Okay? So again, placement, waiting and placement, Mr. Shingler, you ran some of the greatest group homes. We don't have that anymore. We have institutions that don't campaign, Roach, for placements to accept our children because they go with they bad, they this, and here's a whole list of what they doing, but they don't put the list of the dysfunctional behavior they have by not providing the appropriate services for our children and supporting the parents and families so they can receive their child. And the most important thing, Roach, I really want you to get a topic on that. If a child gets in trouble, the landlord can put the whole family out.
Well,
oh, yes. Absolutely.
That's in public housing.
Any housing. If the landlord feel that a violent crime or whatever happened, they can go to court and say, we want them to move. They're a danger to my other tenants. But then the children go off and they're not on the voucher and you just have the mother and the voucher is lost. So I am saying, oh yeah, so our children come back sofa to sofa, bed to bench to bench. So let's have real conversations. Let's collect real data that really force our funders. And funders, look, you send out community scouts and you look at their, what you call decorative proposals. look good, numbers look good on that expensive paper, but you're not looking at the content of the real work that is being done and constantly talking about, we don't have this, we ain't incorporated, we ain't got clean hands. We got good clean hands because we're in the streets doing the work.
Okay. All right, you listening to WPFW. The phone number to call is 202-588-0893. You're listening to Janice Patterson of Pine Watch. This is the second hour, about 2 hour broadcast on the first Tuesday of each month. Our guest who was scheduled for today had to deal with an emergency. And one of the things I want to mention, she works over at the detention center for all the kids waiting to go to trial or be sentenced. It was called a receiving home now. It's called Youth Services. And I went there in 1958, Joe, doing it was still segregated. And that was the first time I ever slept in a bed by myself.
No.
I had four brothers, and we all slept in a bed right across the street. And you had to get in the bed first before the next one could get there, because you had to get in the best spot because somebody's feet would be in your face, you know, or on top of you. So when they locked me up and took me to the detention center, I was like 11 years old. And he took me into this room, and it was a bed, a face bowl, and a bowl. And the guy gave me the blanket and the sheet, and he get ready to leave. I said, where you going? He said, this is your, you mean I'm in here all by myself? I said, you should have been locked me up. I said, my bed is, I got a bed, a face bowl, a table. Y'all should have been locked me up. So that was the first time I ever got a bed, was when I got arrested. And a lot of kids are going through that. When they're talking about the youth problems, we got a 40% truancy rate in D.C., 4 out of every 10 kids don't make it to school. A lot of times because they don't have a home. They're sleeping in the streets. The homelessness problem for our youth is off the chart. We talking about, we all know what the causes are. Jobs will make this community safe for all of us. Jobs reduce crime. Jobs save lives. I always tell this story about this 5-year-old boy who came to my office and wanted a job. He's 5 years old. He said, I want a job. So I started laughing. I said, well, just take the trash out. He took the trash out for a couple of days. I gave him $5. Then he come back then the next day and said, I need a raise. A raise? He said, $5 ain't enough. So the thing we do every year with Marion Barry Summer Youth Job Programs, for them people around the country who are not familiar with the Marion Barry, the late mayor Summer Youth Job Programs, they hire several thousand kids during the summer for 90 days. Then the problem is they get a check every 2 weeks. Now when the fall hit, they don't get a dime. So they don't have no money. The summer youth job should be all year. We need to bring the business community to the table to make sure these kids, we gave them a habit. You give somebody a job for 90 days, then you take it away. So then they got to find somewhere else because their families don't have no money. So again, jobs, employment help stop some of this problem. We got two callers on the line. We'll take our first caller. You're on the air, please. Question or comment?
Hey, Roach, it's Marvin from Washington. How you doing, man?
Hey, how you doing, man?
How you doing, man? I talked on your program before Melvin Mosby went to court. And, like you said, she's not the only prosecutor that's been targeted, man, because she's trying to level the playing field. You know, equally, and other prosecutors has been prosecuted too.
Yes.
But you know, like, I want to talk. I went down to Baltimore. I go down to Baltimore a lot. I go down, and I know people from organizations like No Struggle, No Success. You know,
that's Stanley Mitchell.
Yeah. Stanley Mitchell, right? Yeah. I've gone down there and talked to our sleepy kids out there on the streets, man. You know, out there trying to make, ends meet for their families and stuff like that. You know, our situation is so complex, but a lot of people don't know about these organizations, man. You know, we got to go on word of mouth, each one teaching.
Okay.
Them. Yeah. You know.
All righty.
Yeah.
Thank you. Coach, man, thank you for the comments, man. We'll take our next caller. Question or comment? You're on the air.
Yeah. Hello.
Hello, come on, you got it.
How you doing? Can you hear me? My name is
Lester. Come on, we got you.
I'm the executive director of DC Coalition for Housing Justice, Inc. I have a question. I know that the chief is not there today, but I would like to ask, if she was there, the council has to take some of the blame for the current public safety crisis in this city. I would like to ask her, number one, what happened to community policing? I would also like to ask the council, why is it the council cannot address the affordability question, the housing affordability question in the city, which has forced a little over 40,000 people to leave this city and have increased the homeless population in this city? Why is it the council will not strengthen rent control, make rent control strong? I'm a native Washingtonian, and in my lifetime, we never had a problem of affordability. But between Anthony Williams, Fenty, and Bowser, we have a housing affordability question. And no one on the council is demanding strong rent control. Number two, why is it that we can't get the Department of Housing and Community Development, DCRA, and all these other agencies to enforce inspections? Okay, in the last couple of months, we have the Foster House building, which the Attorney General have had to come to the rescue of those people because of the disrepairs and the life threatening conditions in the Foster House. We've also recently found out about condos in Far Southeast that are in disrepair, that are threatening the health conditions. So the question is, the city, the council, and the mayor must take some of the blame for the current public safety issues that this city is currently in doing, the current crisis in this city.
You're right on target with that, man. Well, what's your name again?
The name is Lester Cuffey. I'm the executive director of the DC.
I'm remembering you. Give me a call, man, when the show is over. I need to talk. You're working with the housing. We can deal with that a little more in detail and do a whole show on that. Thank you for calling. We got three more people on the line. Question or comment? You're on the air. Lester, you're on the air, please. Hello. Can you speak? Get a little closer to your mic. Yeah, turn your radio down. Okay, go ahead. You're on the air. Question or comment?
Yes, I have. Give me 90 seconds. My name is Robert Andrew Moses. From Fort Washington, Maryland. Jesus is the rock. Jesus is the mountain, and was the mountain, and will be the mountain. Moses went to the mountain. Jesus is the mountain. The mountain came to Muhammad. Muhammad said, "What's love got to do with it? These Christians are oppressing my people." So he preached the Quran. Only a fool would say there is no God. Chairman Mao was the foolish old man who moved the mountain. And like I said, Jesus is the mountain. It's all about love and constituency.
Thank you. And next caller. Thank you, man. You must be a reverend. Next caller, please. Okay, well, that's it. We're talking to Janice Patterson of Parent Watch. We're doing the second hour of a two-hour show that we do the first Tuesday of every month. We did the first hour on the Marilyn Mosby request for a pardon. And that's this coming Thursday, December the 5th. The bus is leaving. This Thursday at 12 o'clock at Freedom Plaza, a group is coming from Baltimore that are committed to requesting a pardon for former state's attorney in Baltimore, Marilyn Mosby. She was convicted of a couple of civil beefs that really wouldn't have been a beef. If her skin was another color and she didn't try to help black folks, she would never even be locked up or be tried. So there's a rally going this Thursday at 12 o'clock at Freedom Plaza. They will leave there and they can walk to the White House, and they're requesting a pardon for former state's attorney Marilyn Mosby, who's a good friend of ours, and she's been fighting on our behalf. And again, I've been dealing with the criminal justice system over 50 years, and I never had a prosecutor that I could talk to, because we know the prosecutors recommend how much time you get. They can get you in or get you out. And this young lady did some marvelous things over in Baltimore, not locking up the squeezy workers, stopped prosecuting low-level marijuana, then locked up 33 cops who were corrupt, the Freddie Gay case. It can go on and on and on. When a sister stands up for us, regardless of what robe she had, we got to support her.
That's right.
So please, if you can, come down to Freedom Plaza this Thursday at 12 o'clock at 14th and Pennsylvania Avenue for this rally. The phone number to call, if you're interested, if you're in Baltimore, is 410-978-6889. 410-978-6889. And you get all the information about the rally.
where the bus is leaving from Baltimore. But on 12 o'clock this Thursday, if you can, make it down to Freedom Plaza, and they're requesting a party. Because if you don't help her, who would help you? We got to help our own in order to get help for ourselves. So this is what this is about. I want to thank Marilyn Mosby for what she's been doing. And also, you can check out our program. It's called YourNewBeginningsDC.org. Visit our website, YourNewBeginnings.org, YourNewBeginningsDC.org. And there's a whole list of things about what we've been doing with Inner Voices, WPFW. My wife got a fashion modeling business, and we've been involved in the community for over 52 years. And we don't get paid, but I do. I get paid with smiles. I get paid with hugs. I can have a pocket full of money and feel one way, but if somebody hugged me, I feel better than a pocket full of money, because hug means somebody's love you. So that's been that. So don't forget, this Thursday at 12 o'clock, we got to push Marilyn Mosby. And I just see another friend just come in, Tyrone Parker. All these rascals coming in here, Kenny Barnes, all these Reverend Golson. Well, all y'all coming in, and it is cold. Y'all must have really got something to come in here for. It is below zero in here. Kenny Barnes, Tyrone Parker, old Calvin Shingler. I see all you turkeys in here. That's right, the young brothers, the young soldiers. So, Joe, I want to thank you for joining us. I got a few words from my wife. She want to say something. She always do. I got to shut up. Now it's her turn. Come on here, wifey. I'm okay. Now, here you go. Here's my wifey. Come on.
Okay, I just wanted to remind people that Thursday is at the Mock Train. Thursday, meet at the Mock Train, 10 a.m., 2215 West Franklin in Baltimore. Get on the bus. And folks who live here in D.C., meet at Freedom Plaza noon, okay? We got to get Marilyn Mosby. We need a party.
Yeah, we need a party. And if anybody know Kamala Harris, you can get to Kamala. Kamala's right in the White House with Biden. Biden just pardoned his son. The opportunity is there. The climate is there. The richness is there. If we can get to Kamala, we can get Marilyn pardoned. They got less than 48 days in the White House, and Biden right now don't care what he do or what he don't do. There's nothing they can do to hurt him without him committing a direct crime. So Trump pardoned 135 people the last week he was in the White House. Obama pardoned like 600-some people. He pardoned more people than any president in the history of this country is Obama. So Biden, you pardon your son. Here's a daughter that need to be pardoned. Somebody's mother that need to be pardoned. We got a lot of kids and folks who are in oh, yeah. Yeah, we all don't need pardons. There's three other ways he can release us. There's the furlough program, which I came out on and for five years. They can let you out. Every warden has the ability to extend the limits of confinement. He can let you off at 8, 10, 12 hours or up to 30 days in the community. And we was able to take advantage of that. There's other ways. You can talk about the furlough program, home confinement. Conditional release. There's ways that he ain't got to be getting a pardon or commutation. There's other release mechanisms that he can use in his last 48 days to get out. We got two callers. Okay. That he can leave out. So we can ask for pardons, ask for commutations, but we also can ask for work release, furloughs, home confinement, outreach, suspended sentence. Every warden at every prison has the authority to let you out for 8, 10, 12 hours, up to 30 days. Any warden at any prison, federal or state, can let you out. So if Biden ordered the president, ordered the warden in the Federal Bureau of Prisons to extend the furlough program, to grant pre-release, work release, there's other things. The pardon is the big piece, but there's a couple of little pork chop sandwiches on the tree that you can pull off to get you out of here. So don't just go at one street. There's other things we can do to get our people home and out them places. Our time is up. My name is Roach Brown. We'll come back to you next week, next Tuesday. I want to thank Janice Patterson and everybody who joined, who participated in the show. Guillermo, my wife, Mo Thomas, Kenny Barnes, all you rascals, man. I
Black Eagles. So I want to say thanks to everybody who participated. We'll come back to you next Tuesday. And remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas.
Scrub the floors for Minnie, and you best believe she hardly gets a penny. Living just enough for the city.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Scott Baba. Israel's defense minister warned that if the shaky ceasefire with Hezbollah collapses, Israel will widen its strikes and target the Lebanese state itself. He spoke the day after Israel carried out a wave of airstrikes that killed nearly a dozen people. Those strikes came after the Lebanese militant group fired a volley of projectiles as a warning over what it said were previous Israeli violations. Speaking to troops on the northern border today, Defense Minister Israel Katz said any violation of the agreement would be met with a maximum response and zero tolerance. He said if the war resumes, Israel will widen its strikes beyond the areas where Hezbollah's activities are concentrated and, quote, there will no longer be an exemption for the state of Lebanon. Lebanon's parliament speaker, Nabi Berri, accused Israel of violating the truce more than 50 times in recent days by launching airstrikes, demolishing homes near the border, and violating Lebanon's airspace. South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol has declared an emergency martial law, accusing the country's opposition of controlling the parliament and paralyzing the government with anti-state activities. Yoon made the announcement during a televised briefing today, vowing to, quote, eradicate pro-North Korean forces and protect the constitutional democratic order. Yoon's conservative People Power Party had been locked in an impasse with the liberal opposition Democratic Party over next year's budget bill. The Democratic Party reportedly called an emergency meeting of its lawmakers following Yoon's announcement. At least 19 people have died and 15 million have been affected after Cyclone Fengal made landfall in southern India. Ishan Garg reports.
112,000 first responders are carrying out rescue and relief operations in Tamil Nadu. They are setting up relief shelters and makeshift camps to rehabilitate the tens of thousands of people displaced from their homes. The state government says Cyclone Fengal has destroyed hundreds of houses and particularly impacted the state's poorest living in thatched huts. Chief Minister M.K. Stalin has requested the federal government to provide $235 million in aid. Stalin says the disaster has stretched the state's resources and the fallout could be unmanageable without federal assistance.
And that was Ishan Garg reporting. China announced today it is banning exports to the United States of gallium, germanium, antimony, and other key high-tech materials with potential military applications as a general principle, lashing back at U.S. limits on semiconductor-related exports. The Chinese Commerce Ministry announced the move after Washington expanded its list of Chinese companies subject to export controls on computer chip-making equipment, software, and high-bandwidth memory chips. Such chips are needed for advanced applications. The ratcheting up of trade restrictions comes as President-elect Donald Trump has been threatening to sharply raise tariffs on imports from China and other countries, potentially intensifying simmering tensions over trade and technology. President Joe Biden's decision to go back on his word and pardon his son Hunter wasn't that surprising to those who are familiar with the president's devotion to his family. But by choosing to put his family first, the 82-year-old president has raised new questions about his legacy. Catherine Carley reports.
Democrats are warning about the ramifications of President Joe Biden pardoning his son Hunter. Maryland Congressman Glenn Ivey says the decision is hard to defend.
I know that there was a real strong sentiment wanting to protect Hunter Biden from unfair prosecution, but this is going to be used against us when we're fighting the misuses that are coming from the Trump administration.
President Biden long vowed not to pardon his son, who faced gun and tax charges stemming from a time of drug addiction. Meanwhile, Massachusetts Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley is asking Biden to grant clemency to thousands of Americans serving time in federal prisons, including the elderly and chronically ill. She points to the much harsher sentences for crack than powder cocaine and marijuana convictions in places where it's now legal.
People with unjustified sentencing disparities like crack cocaine, and even those who don't benefit from